Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pro Wrestling Boom Live. I am Jason Powell. I'll be joined shortly by Survivor Hall of Famer Johnny Fairplay, and we are taking your calls coming out of a very busy weekend in pro wrestling. AEW Dynasty on Sunday night and TNA Rebellion on Saturday night, going head-to-head with a three-hour block of AEW programming. Get used to that because of the NBA and NHL playoffs. We'll be doing that, I think, a couple of more times at least with the three-hour blocks. And, man, a lot of good wrestling this weekend. I gave the AEW pay-per-view an A-minus grade. Jake Barnett in our same night audio review for .NET members gave it a B+. And then I gave the TNA show a good solid B grade. If you haven't had a chance yet, I did record a Boom episode just with my full audio review of TNA Rebellion. We can talk about both of those shows and anything else current events related in the world of pro wrestling today. You can join us by calling the number, 773-897-6321. You'd think I'd know it off the top of my head by now, but I'm not the brightest bulb. Once you do that, hit one on your phone to let us know that you want in on the conversation, and we will be happy to chat with you. We also have an email option. The callers take priority, but we typically have enough time to get to all the email questions. We have a number of them waiting already, but you can get in line with those as well. .NETJason@gmail.com. So I don't see Fairplay listed yet in the caller queue, so I will give you a couple of thoughts on the Rebellion show before we dive into calls, and maybe Johnny's just running late, or he's going to no-show. I don't know. What's up with that? But, yeah, Rebellion. Look, I think the show peaked with Ospreay and Danielson. How could it not? I felt really bad for FTR and the Young Bucks out there taking crazy bumps and doing all sorts of crazy things while having to follow that match. And that was kind of a classic example of why you will see buffer matches or even a buffer segment. If you're like, why are they following this really good match with Miz TV on a PLE? Well, oftentimes that would be why. And, yeah, they just didn't put enough time in there. And I don't think it helped that Danielson really sold the Storm Driver? I can't remember what the name of Ospreay's move was that he used. But the way he sold it really did scare the crowd. And I think they would have been burned out anyway for the next match, no matter what it was. But when he did that, it really, I think, brought the crowd down. They got them back eventually. We have a new world champion in AEW. His name is Swerve Strickland. He defeated Samoa Joe last night. Not in my top three for best overall match, but still a good match. And I like the outcome. I like the decision to put the title on Swerve. That being said, Samoa Joe, really, really happy to see that Joe got a title reign at this stage in his career. You know, he was such a good champion for Ring of Honor and played such a big role in TNA. WWE, I mean, he was used, but he was never really featured as the guy. And I didn't know if he would get that opportunity in AEW, and maybe he wouldn't have if MJF didn't have injuries. I don't know. But he certainly made the most of it and was a good, credible champion for that promotion. And I'm happy they gave him a few months. They didn't just do a quick transitional title change. And now the question is, how long do they stick with Swerve? A lot of people seem to think that it's set in stone that they're going with Will Ospreay as their champion at Wembley Stadium. Do they have to? I look at the lay of the land and think that could be the plan. But I also see that Okada holds the Continental Championship. He certainly has history with Ospreay. And so maybe this year you go with that match instead if you want to give Swerve a longer title reign. I think they have some options, some fun ones. And one thing I was reminded of while watching the show last night is that AEW has an incredible roster. They put on mostly incredible pay-per-view events. It's the weekly television that continues to hold this company back. If they can ever figure out a way to produce good quality weekly television that gives these matches the storyline support that they deserve, they're going to have something. But it's a big assignment for them to figure this out. It's just never been their strength. And I hope they can figure that out, whether it requires Tony Khan to bring in more help or to bring in an actual booker, or even to split the duties with someone. You know, maybe Tony wants Dynamite. Let somebody else take Collision. Throw Rampage of the Wolves. That show could go away. I would never complain if that happened. Well, I still do not see Fairplay unless he's calling in from a different number. I'll check my DMs here And let's see. Do I have one from Johnny Fairplay yet? I don't know what's going on with that kid. Let's find out. He is running late, he says. He says he may be 5 minutes late. What an unprofessional son of a... With that said, let's go to the guy who pretty much replaces Fairplay when he is unavailable to do the show. He is a frequent caller to the show. He has been a guest host, and he is the one and only Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. What's happening, my man?
Not much, Jason. It's always good to be on here with you, man. How you doing today?
Hanging in there. It was a long weekend. You know, there was a lot of wrestling to watch. I think I went to bed on Sunday morning about 3:30. I did get to sleep in, so it's like I didn't fall too far behind on sleep. But there was a lot of wrestling, and it's so soon after WrestleMania weekend. I was like, oh, my gosh, can we just get a little bit of a break? But that'll come this weekend when I sit my ass on the couch for three straight days and watch the NFL draft.
Right. And I will say, I'm with you. Like, you know, I give Johnny a lot of love and I give him a lot of respect, which most people probably would not. But, like, this is ridiculous, Johnny. Get your stuff together, man. Get on here on time. Get on here on time, dang.
Amen. Yeah. That's right. Tell him, Sean.
No, so I wanted, you know, obviously talk about AEW Dynasty. I couldn't give it an A of any kind. After the finish of what Danielson did, I just can't give it an A. I mean, as great as that match was, you know, I'm sorry, people. That just knocked it down for me a lot. I just can't. You have a fantastic match, one of the best, like you and Jake talked about, we've probably ever seen. It's one of the better matches, you know, that I've ever seen. It really is. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and say it wasn't. And Ospreay, I'll give him a lot of credit. He actually sold a lot in that match, which I wasn't expecting. I just thought it was going to go move to move to move to move to move. But it did at times, but it wasn't as much as he did against Testa. And so I was actually really happy about that. And just, like, the chain reaction moves were, you know, were incredible. But when Danielson goes to this injury aspect of, you know, oh, I'm either convulsing or I have a neck injury, or just stop, Brian, stop. We don't need that crap. We don't need to be freaked out about, oh, is it a work? Is it not a work? Just, we need to end this. The match was fine for what it was fantastic for what it was. Just end on that. Have Ospreay win, shake hands, and move on. I mean, am I way off base, or am I just, because it just drove me crazy. It really did. I'm sorry, it just did.
No, I don't think you are. I felt like it took away from Ospreay's moment. And then I also felt like it, you know, really did do some damage to the crowd when it came to that next match. I didn't think it was worth it. And then I did see the press conference, and Will Ospreay tried to sell this like he may never use that move again. And I'm like, okay, well, I mean, that's something. I still don't think you needed to do this on the pay-per-view. But then Tony Khan turned around and made it seem like Danielson's fine and he's good to go. So what was really accomplished by this, other than taking away from Ospreay's moment and killing the crowd for the next match, I don't get it. And I'm normally all for taking, if you're going to perform a high-risk, dangerous move like that, make it count. You know, really sell it. But this was kind of overboard. So, yeah, we're on the same page with that one for sure. With that, before we get to your next question, by the way, 305-262, I see you. We'll be taking your calls in that order. He's here. He's late. He is, let's see, 8 minutes late for the start of the show.
Time.
Almost nine. He is Johnny Fairplay. I guess big timing us. You're like Mercedes Moné coming out at the end of the TBS title change and just big timing the situation, Johnny. What's going on?
That's my move. I got a new pinball machine today, and they just set it up and walked out.
And if anyone doesn't know, if you didn't watch House of Villains, Johnny Fairplay takes his pinball seriously to the point that he wept on national television because he got a chance to play pinball while he was cooped up in that villain's house. So, yeah, Johnny loves his pinball. Most people, I'd be like, what a crap excuse. Johnny, for you, I do understand. I know how much you love your pinball.
Yeah, Elvira House of Horrors Premium Edition, $10,500, and there's a skill shot when you launch. You go behind the haunted house that goes, oh, I see you like it in the back door.
Nice. I do have to ask, like, how good is the artwork on the cleavage?
Incredible. Oh, incredible. And it's actual live video of her.
Wow. There you go. I saw her not too long ago. I mean, she's obviously... quite a bit older now, but man, she looked great for her age. It's been a couple of years, but the last time I saw her, I just remember thinking like, wow, good for her.
Yeah, but prior to Survivor and post Roddy Piper's personal assistant, I worked at Tamara Bain Gallery in Los Angeles, and I represented the pinup artist Olivia. And she does the Betty Page stuff and Dita Von Teese, and she did some Cassandra Elvira paintings. And she'd come into the gallery and she'd sign the cliches and stuff. And I remember, and you know, I met her then, and this was 2001. And then fast forward to pre-COVID, probably the last big Comic-Con prior to COVID, I saw her. I was like, "Hey, I'm trying." She was like, "Oh my God, you're the guy from Survivor." I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Actually, I met." She's like, "You're the same person." I'm like, "Yes, I'm the same person." So no, she looks beautiful. She's a redhead, which is the exact opposite, of the dark, dark brown and black.
Sure.
Hair that you typically see her with, but yeah, no, she's beautiful. So just a beautiful, beautiful woman, and that's I think that's in the top four pinball tables of all time. So had the opportunity to add it to the collection. The guy drove an hour and a half from Wake Forest, North Carolina. Got here at noon, and we literally just finished setting it up. So I apologize for the delay, but I did watch the AEW last night, and while at the same time watching your crappy Minnesota FC team beat my Charlotte FC team, and myself and King George had a little bit of money riding on it, so not happy with you Minnesota people today.
I wish I could tell you I cared. I can't even make time for the Timberwolves. I'm a Wild guy, and so
sure.
I've watched like 5 minutes of the soccer club. And I noticed, all the fans were acting like they were in Europe, and it was, 100 degrees, and they're all wearing the scarves. And I'm just like, you're all posers.
Yeah. So soccer is so big. King George is from Australia, and so we went to a Charlotte FC last Saturday night, not this past. And he was just like, America loves soccer. I'm like, yeah. They do, most of them do a big tailgate before. It's $10 all you can drink. And I'm like, sold. Let's go.
$10 all you can drink. I take it back. They are not posers. Those are my kind of people.
Exactly. Who knew?
Hey, what else do you have for us, Sean?
Yeah. I just want to hear Johnny's thoughts on that real quick. Johnny, what did you think about? I know you didn't get to hear me. I was Osprey Danielson was again. The match itself was fantastic. Nobody's arguing that. I just thought. Are you with me on the injury angle being awful? I just thought it ruined the match for me. It just took me out of it. Osprey needed a strong win, and he got the strong win as far as the move. It's just all the controversy, is he okay, is he not? I don't need that in my wrestling. Just give me a great wrestling match and have Osprey win and go home. What'd you think of it? Are you with me?
I don't need the injury angle. That what's it, the Storm Driver? That's a vicious move,
yeah,
and Brian took it viciously, and I, truth be told, I wish he wouldn't. However, it was an amazing visual. What I don't need is as a result of actually watching the pay-per-view in real time, I was able to go on my social media this morning and they have, continuing on in the back and Brian's there with Will Ospreay in the back and the doctors and they're acting like, it is a potential paralysis or a career in. I don't need that with my Daniel Bryan. I think in the ring was enough, and I don't really. I'll accept it. I'll allow it, as they say. But the post partial paralysis or stroke or whatever, that's our care level for Daniel Bryan is so high that don't take advantage of that with us.
With you and Sean, I do have a question for you. You're pretty fired up about this. So I'm curious to know where you were coming from. When you saw it happen and Danielson starts selling, did you think he was legitimately injured? When did you recognize, okay, this isn't a legitimate injury?
I guess for me, when he first did the move and he landed, your first instinct is to go, okay, well, maybe that is kind of real. Surely Brian won't do this again. He won't do this work again. And then he just kind of sold it, and he just oversold it to me where I was like, yeah, this is such a work.
Gotcha.
This is so stupid. I'm over it. And I thought it, when it, and that's what was so frustrating for me, just knowing how fantastic that match was and how incredible that match was, and knowing Brian has done this before in the, like in the Okada match, it's just like, stop doing this, Brian. Like, you, we love you, man. Just have a great match. Give him the respect he deserves, and, like, let's move on from this. Why do we have to have this angle at the end of it? And then what's worse, Jason, and Jake talked about it last night, which I'm glad he did, was when they go to the video package, and then they come back, and he's already out of the ring. Like what? Like, it was like 2 minutes, and he's already out of the freaking ring? Like, come on. Like, you got to sell this deeper. If you're going to go to that, if you're going to go to that level, by golly, you better sell it.
They did sell it deeper. As I said, the shoulder content, they absolutely show him in the back with the doctors and act like, and they run the camera crew out of there because it's so serious. And I'm just like, okay, this, I don't like this.
No, it was bad.
I didn't think, you know, I watching it, I'm like, I think he landed pretty well. I'm not really sure what he would have done, so I don't think this is legit. So it wasn't like I felt burned by that. But when they did go to their very brief video package to set up the next match, and they came back and he was gone, I'm just like, oh, all right, well, now you're telling everyone this is a work. I mean, it's just, you don't move somebody that quickly who's, you know, teasing paralysis or whatever it was he was going for there. And so, yeah, it was but it's, you know, that's AEW. They take very little time in between matches. They got to rush on to the next match. It wasn't worth it. What else do you have for us, Sean?
Yeah, so going back early in the show, going back to the Trios match, which, again, the Trios match I don't think needed to be on this show, and I know you guys talked about it. There were so many matches you could have taken off the show that you just didn't need. You just didn't need it. And going back to the Trios match, the work was good for what it was. I mean, the matches were good. They're always going to be good. And I'm glad House of Black got the win, but here's my issue is, if they're going to Malakai against Copeland for the TNT title, I know Wade has talked about multiple times that Malakai doesn't want to do jobs. And so, you know, the thought is, well, you're going to have them have their match at Double or Nothing maybe. That, you know, I think that might be the plan. And then if Malakai does go over, which, I mean, me, I'm fine with as far as pushing Malakai, but if he's not, why do I want to reward somebody that never wants to do a job? I don't know why you'd want to reward somebody for that. So I'm kind of torn. Where do you think they're going with this Black Copeland? Do you think they're going that way, and do you think Black would win, and should he win if they go that route?
Yeah, Johnny, man, I assume they're doing the match. I haven't even really given much thought in terms of the outcome. My bigger fear is that the Black Mist turns Adam Copeland to evil, as we've seen them do before. I'm hoping they've moved past that, but what do you think of all this?
My fiance never wants to do a job.
And yet you're marrying her anyway. I'll be damned.
Oh, well. I'll be here all week, folks. No, the Trios match was a great match. However, that could have easily been on Dynamite, and I want to see Copeland versus Malakai Black on a pay-per-view. So that's all I was thinking the whole time is, why am I watching a Trios match, not for a Trios championship, on what will probably end up being a five-hour pay-per-view?
Yeah, I feel you. And it was a really good match. They did a nice job with it until the Mist at the end. And Rick Knox very conveniently turning away for the first time to look at Nothing at ringside. Like, oh, my God. They just make this guy look like a doofus every time out. So I did not like the finish. But as far as, like, Black, I mean, I'll just say people change. Maybe he's agreed to put over Copeland. If they
I think
put
he
the title on him. Well, if they do, then I would hope that Tony Khan feels secure enough to that, you know, he's in a good place with Black, and he knows that when the time comes, Black will drop that title. If not, well, then, you know, you kind of get what you get. I really don't know what to say. I'm hoping the talk of Black and his lack of interest in putting others over is maybe, I'm not accusing Wade of it, but just in general, because it's not just Wade. I mean, everybody's talked about this at one time or another. I'm hoping it's blown a little out of proportion. Or maybe Black has heard the criticism, is like, I'll do it. Just, you know, the right situation. Adam Copeland, sure, I'll put him over. But we'll see. Yeah. What else you got, Sean?
Yeah, no, I'll go to my last thing. And there's so much to talk about. I hope that, you know, DJ and the other guys get on and can share some of that. But I'll go to the women's division as a whole and talk about the two women's matches. You know, I was happy for Willow, for sure. I was very happy that she won the title. I mean, it wasn't going to be much, I'm assuming, because of Julia's injury. So I want to hear what Johnny, especially you, both of you guys have thought about Mercedes so far. I think it's been awful so far, literally just awful. She's got to be a heel. Please turn heel at some point. Like, we need you to be heel because you suck at the face. And so what you think, where they're going with Willow Mercedes, turning Willow heel would be awful. I don't know where they're going with that. I'm kind of confused as to where they're leading that direction. And then going back to Tony and Thunder Rosa as well, I thought that match was really good for what it was. There's just, people don't know, people want to cheer Tony Storm. That's basically bottom line. They were torn on who to cheer for. They like Tony Storm, but Thunder Rosa's the face and Tony's the heel. I just think the longer Tony has this title, I just think it hurts because her character just isn't a main event character. It's just not. It's too over the top and goofy, and it's fun, but it's not what I want in my champion. It's not what I'm thinking. So I wanted to hear what you thought about both women's feuds, and I'll get off and let others get on. Jason, again, you're one of the best. Johnny, I'm glad you're on, man. Enjoy your pinball machine, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. I appreciate you guys taking my call, though.
Thank you.
Always good to hear from you, Sean. Thanks, man. Johnny, what did you think?
So I'm not overly familiar with Willow Nightingale, because she hasn't been on a ton of AEW pay-per-views. And I think there's like two that I've missed in the history of AEW, so she may have been a part of that. So this is kind of like my first real experience with her. I think she's really good in the ring. I see the babyface potential in her. And of course, I follow along, you know, with you, Jason, you know, every week, you know, via the .NET Weekly. So, you know, I know what's going on, you know, in AEW as a whole. Willow Nightingale, I was not a fan of the name prior to really seeing her. And then I have King George here from Australian Survivor, you know, one of the greatest Australian survivors of all time, one of the greatest survivors of all time. And George is a big fan of RuPaul's Drag Race. And he said that Willow Nightingale sounds like someone that's an early boot on RuPaul's Drag Race. so the name is AEW doesn't kill it with a lot of names and the women, like what Sky Blue, I think, is a horrible name. Red Velvet and the cake mixing is horrible. And Willow Nightingale's right there. right there for me. So, just, you know, but, Monet, or I don't even know how to pronounce it now.
Monet.
Monet. Okay. Did I get it?
Monet, like money.
Monet. Okay. That's obnoxious. That's a heel. That's what a heel says. It's not Monet.
And so is the dancing.
Oh, the dancing. Well, it's uncomfortable dancing. I dance too when I'm uncomfortable. It's over just as good as Monet does. But she's proven throughout her career. She's a much more effective heel, even if she's a cool heel and being cheered. But we found the same with Britt Baker. Britt Baker is a much more effective heel, even if she's a cool heel.
Yeah, I think that the Willow – well, first off, Willow Nightingale, she used that name prior to AEW. And
yeah.
I remember when she started in ROH, there's just something about it. It grows on you, like most wrestling names. Like
sure, Dolph Ziggler.
Which sounds like Gunther. Dolph Ziggler, Gunther, yeah. All of them. Eventually, yeah. They just kind of become normal to you. And that one has for me. But I do remember when I first started seeing her in ROH, I'm like, just – maybe go with Willow and drop the Nightingale part. But I think it fits her. I think she is incredibly talented, and it would be a big mistake to turn her heel right now. She is very over. They've just scratched the surface with her as a babyface. And Mercedes, yeah, she's a much better heel. I do think we'll see Chris Statlander revealed as the mystery attacker for the lights out bit
that
they did. Yeah.
I'm more than okay with that.
Yeah, they leaned into it a little last night, too, by having that weird stipulation that part of the house rules that Statlander was barred from ringside along with Sky Blue, and she seemed surprised by that. So I think that will kind of play into it. As far as the other match is concerned, well worked. I just never bought into Rosa potentially winning. I didn't feel like they gave her enough of a strong push since she's returned to really make you feel like, ooh, this could be her night. But I still felt like it was her best outing since she returned, and I liked it overall.
Yeah,
I think we covered everything he asked about. Hey, before we get to 305 and 262, Johnny, I know you're always a busy man, other than hanging out with King George. Well, I'm sure you'll be doing this as You'll be hanging with him as part of what you got coming up. Tell people about what's going on in your reality television world.
Sure. I've been touring the country. Well, actually, I've been touring the world. In February, I was in Australia with King George. We were in Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane, and then we've covered Australian Survivor there, and then now we're here in the States. We started, I believe, 5 weeks ago in Los Angeles. We were at Jax's bar, Jax from Vanderpump Rules in the Valley and House of Villains. We started there in Los Angeles, and then we worked our way to Durham, North Carolina, and then we were in Chicago 2 weeks ago, Cincinnati this past week. This Wednesday night, we're going to be in Charlottesville, Virginia at Three Notch Brewing. It's a Survivor 46 viewing party, and the season's actually gotten good. It only took 7 weeks, but we have a great season now. Thank you, Q, and thank you, Kinsey and Venus and others for making it exciting. So you can join us this Wednesday in Charlottesville, Virginia. Tickets available at SurvivorTix.com. That's SurvivorTix.com. Next Wednesday, May 1st, we're going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina at Protagonist Beer. It's myself and King George once again. We will have a special mystery guest that we're not allowed to advertise. There's no way it's Kinsey from this season because she's not allowed to be there.
No, of course
and
not.
So, yes. So go to SurvivorTix.com. That's SurvivorTix.com. Join us in Charlotte, May 1st. Tickets available for all those. Those are $75 VIP, $25 general admission. And then Wednesday, May 15th is the final night of our tour for us collectively. We are going to be in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina at Crab Catchers. Oh, don't want to date her. And Crab Catchers, that is a free event. So you just go to SurvivorTix.com and register your ticket online, and it is a free event. And I think we already have 100 people coming. It's going to be really awesome. That's my last night of the tour with King George. He's going to finish up with Bryson Wendell. Check out at Bryson Wynn Presents on your social medias, or just go to BrysonWynnPresent.com. And they're having the big Survivor 46 finale in New York City. I will be in Los Angeles filming something I can't say anything about. So get ready.
Ooh.
And as far as the podcast side of things, realityaftershow.com or Reality After Show is my podcast. If you want to watch the show, it's at youtube.com/aftershow. If you want to listen, search Reality After Show with Johnny Fairplay. But don't search Reality After Show with Johnny Fairplay on the Apple Podcast and Spotify and everywhere that you see that for long, because we're undergoing some changes. It is just going to be the Reality After Show Podcast Network starting in a couple weeks. And all new shows coming. We have some of the biggest names in the history of reality television doing their shows independently. We have some of the greatest women in the history of reality television. They're doing a Bravo show. King George and I are doing just a real life show. We're going to have a Survivor show with additional Survivors. We have a Challenge show. We're covering Challenge All-Star 4. We have Season 40, which is just wrapping up filming, and we'll be covering that. With Pauly Calafiore, one of the greatest challenge players of all time. Our Big Brother coverage, we're going to have two podcasts going at the same time. That's going to be nuts. So look for some extreme changes to the Reality After Show Network. We're very excited. And potentially George moving to the U.S. So lots of big things happening. Jason Plenty, I'm going to talk to you off the air about with that. But get ready. We're pretty stoked.
I definitely think we need to catch up. It sounds like there's a lot going on, and I can tell you've been hanging out with some Aussies based on your pronunciation of what I would say, what I would call Brisbane and Melbourne. You actually have the correct pronunciation. Well done, sir.
It's from drinking a lot of beer.
Fair enough.
That's the key.
305, you've been waiting a long time. Let's go to you. 262, you're right on deck, so sit tight. But 305, I'm guessing this is DJ in Miami?
That's me, DJ from Miami.
What? Hey, what's going on, man?
What's going on? I got to ask Johnny one thing. Did you do anything crazy for 420?
Yeah, I went to Wiseman Brewing in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Took a picture of me hitting a big fatty bowl of some Northern Lights. I take that back. Lamb of God was the my weed of choice for the day, and posted reels across my social media for Happy 420. And Wiseman Beer, despite it not being legal in North Carolina, it is in Virginia, but they reposted and liked it and loved it. So, yeah, there was a really cool reggae band playing. I was actually gone for my fiance's birthday on Monday. We were traveling to Big Tom's and then on over to Cincinnati. And so Big Tom gave us some weed to smoke, and I did my fiance's birthday enjoying reggae music, which is some of her favorite, and then partaking in festivities and making a nice slow drive home.
Nice.
There you go. Yeah. DJ, don't you want to know what the hell I did for 420? What the hell?
For it.
Yeah.
I covered 7 hours of wrestling, but I actually did partake in the holiday festivities because I knew I had until 6 o'clock. So I celebrated on Atlantic time at what would be 4:20 Atlantic time by having a little 5 milligram gummy. And it was just enough to take the edge off and fun, but took the edge off. And I was nice and sober by the time I had to work.
Jason, you'll appreciate this. Matt Bischoff has never done marijuana of any variety. And last Friday night was his 50th birthday party. And his band Moombo played. His son Ryder DJed. And at the end of the party, we had some mutual friends that are big in the cultivating community. They grow and they make gummies and all that. And so they gave him a satchel of gummies. And he was like, you know what? It's my 50th birthday party. I'm going to try gummies for the first time ever. So he eats a whole 25-milligram gummy because he doesn't know any better. And there's photos of him face down in his driveway in front of his car.
Oh, no.
So well, it's going to be a while before there's a round two, Matt, for Matt.
Yeah, I mean, that sucks because, you know, you'll hear stories like that, and it's like, boy, had he just started slow, he might have enjoyed himself, but now he's probably going to be leery of ever doing it again. I'm just shocked that with that beard, and then you mentioned he's in a band, and that's his first time ever trying. That surprises me. And by the way, anyone going, Powell did what? It's legal here now. We get to do that.
It's legal in Ohio.
No
bitching. Yeah,
there
legal
you go.
In Ohio as well. And it's legal where I am.
Non-weed talk. What do you got for us, man?
It's going to go legal in Florida, her, too, so we'll see. Okay, the first thing is the Swerve thing. I feel like going into this wasn't planned too much because, you know, Tony does not have a good booker, but, you know, he's still a Nana, and Nana's still, you know, a heel, you know, and what makes no sense is, like, going into this, he is the first African-American champion. We waited 4 years for this. And there better be some good-ass, really good heels going to fight him. Because I just don't want to see him and Samoa Joe 10 times or something like that. You know what I'm saying? I don't even think, or Warlow. I want to see real heels go after this guy. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise it's just going to be failed as something that this is supposed to be member, you know, for a long time. The first black champion of EAW.
Well, DJ, he
like
better not go against
with?
Samoa. Well, hold on. He better not go against Samoa Joe 10 times because, as Jim Ross told us, Samoa Joe would probably win 7 of them.
That's right.
So there is that.
I missed that live, but I did hear about it. That's funny.
Yeah,
it was great.
For all the wrong reasons. DJ, who would you like to see him work with?
There's so many people, like, but, you know, like, well, who I want to see him work with is more of in a trio, like, you know, Black or somebody who is a real
Miro.
Yes. Yes. Somebody who's a real heel.
I'm sure he'll be working with Hangman Page again at some point whenever he comes back, given their storyline history. I don't know what's going on with Miro other than he moved to Bulgaria and wants Tony to fly him in, and maybe he would for a one-off, but then there's also the rumor that Miro isn't fond of doing many jobs either. So, maybe you don't bring him in if he's not going to want to put over your world champion. I think they have a slew of people that he can work with, and I do think there should be a rematch with Joe. Maybe that's why Ross, if he knows it's coming, that's why he said it. I thought he had a really good night other than that line that, again, I missed live. But, something you normally say after a major title change. I'm guessing he wishes he had that one back. Unless, again, it was by design to create the need for a rematch or play into the need for one. I don't know. But, they have options, DJ. I don't know what you're fearing as far as, like, who he works with, but I think they'll be fine. What else you have?
Hollywood player who books, so.
What else do you have for us?
My second thing is the draft. Going into the draft, I feel like they keep on talking about, but is the draft going to be worth it? It hasn't been worth it in a couple of years. You know, like, I just feel like Braun Breaker should go to definitely Raw, but I also feel like, you know, maybe somebody good will go to SmackDown, you know what I mean? Like Gunther or somebody like that, and maybe they can, you know, switch and then they can run the titles over there. Or, you know, I just don't want to see the same people over and over, you know, like, oh, Rey Mysterio can't go there because Dominic's there or something stupid. You know what I'm saying? I want to see a good shakeup, because if this is a new start, I want them to say, okay, this is real. Because remember last time they said all this nonsense and all these different things, like, oh, if you're in a group, we can split you up. But guess what? All the groups stayed together. It's like, come on, bro. So it's just like, if they're going to do this right, I want a big shakeup, not just this little thing.
I think this is the most intriguing WWE draft to date. And the reason being is that Vince McMahon's out of power. You do have Paul Levesque taking, and, well, I'm getting to it. You got Paul Levesque taking creative control, and then you have Lee Fitting heading up the production. And Lee Fitting has a background with ESPN, and as somebody, I think Mike McGivern, it was, pointed out on Twitter, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, you know, he knows what a draft looks like. And that part, from a production standpoint, excites me. And, you know, Levesque's not a big sports guy, but he's surrounded by enough people who are, Nick Khan, and certainly Lee Fitting. I just want to see him create some real rules for this thing, enforce them consistently, and just do a sensible shakeup. I don't need a mass, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? There's going to be some people to move. I think Gunther is a candidate to move over to, I assume, SmackDown, if that's where Cody is. Wherever Cody is, I think I could see Gunther going there, because I do see him as a potential challenger for him in a big money match, maybe at SummerSlam, maybe later. But, yeah, I think there's a number of potential moves. Doesn't mean it's going to be good, but I am very excited to see what this draft looks like and just see what everything coming out of it looks like as well. Johnny, your thoughts?
This is the most excited I've ever been for a draft ever, and I'm with you. I want Gunther on the same brand as Cody. I wouldn't mind a build to a Survivor Series showdown between the two, and have the championship change. We did the 3-year holding of the title. I have no problem with Cody losing the championship, maybe by nefarious means, in November at Survivor Series, potentially winning it back at the Royal Rumble, and then working our way to whatever we're doing at WrestleMania. But I'm okay with that, you know, as a potential storyline. And then, you know, with Vince McMahon's never been a sports guy. Triple H has never been a sports guy. But Triple H, from everything we've gathered thus far, is a guy that listens. And I could see him going, hey, this isn't my cup of tea. However, I've heard the problems that people have had with this, because, you know, there are so many people in that locker room, you know, like Mike the Miz just did the big, you know, Cleveland Browns helmet debut on social media yesterday or the day before. Like, there's
is
there's
it brown?
Sports. It's orange. There you go. It looks very much like the old one. Anyway. But there's so many sports people there, and Nick Khan is a sports guy. We've seen that, you know, where he hangs out. So I think this is going to be a drastic change. However, if we don't have the Fox robot in the draft room, I will be disappointed.
Yeah, I'm hoping that there's no, I'm the opposite. No network executives, you know, the people playing executives, that all of that was just so campy. And now we do have general managers. I think they've set that up nicely in advance by having, you know, Adam Pearce will be drafting for one and Aldis for the other. Somehow, some way, I have a feeling we're going to see Triple H on both nights because all of a sudden he can't keep himself off of television. It's the new era, just in case you missed it. It's his era. And, hey, I pick on Tony Khan for having his name mentioned 1,000 times on some episodes of AEW television, so I'm going to pick on Paul Levesque for all of a sudden appearing all over WWE television. I get it. You want to distance yourself from Vince, but I think it's become overkill already, and I hope they pull back on that. But, DJ, did you have more for us?
Yep, my last thing is it's a two-part question. Okay. Jim Cornette's very high on Jacob Fatu. He says on his podcast he'll come out retirement to manage him. Now, Jacob just signed WWE. It's a new era. Where do we see him in a few months from now? Do we see him in the Bloodline, or do we see him for sure in NXT or Raw? Where do we really see him at the end of the day?
Johnny, what do you think?
Bloodline.
Agreed. Johnny, you're not retired, but if you were, would you come out of retirement to manage Jacob Fatu?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? I'd come out of retirement to manage Chad Gable. I don't care. honestly, last night, this was a big takeaway I had from the pay-per-view last night. I love Roderick Strong. And, you know, and he's the most coveted belt in all of professional wrestling, the Mid-Atlantic Continental title, whatever. And I'm sitting there watching Roderick Strong, and I love him. We've been friends for years. But Roderick Strong with that mustache, and if he were to grow his hair out and do like a blonde part, you know, like a Bobby Heenan, or you know, I almost envision like a John Tolis role or whatever, but more Bobby Heenan, but with, you know, I think Roderick Strong would be an incredible bumping manager for someone, and I would love to see him on you know, on the grandest scale of all, you know, WWE. But I think watching him, and I mean, he's done all there really is to do as a wrestler. I think there's another level of that guy as a bumping manager for someone.
He's got to up that promo game. That's always been kind of a shortcoming, and he's improved. You know, he has.
Yes.
I don't think he's there yet, but, you know, if he can continue to improve, maybe. But Jacob Fatu is fantastic. I totally get where Cornette's coming from on him. Saw him for many years working in MLW, and I think the only thing that kept him in MLW and out of one of the major companies was his criminal past. And I'm happy to see that enough time has passed, or what have you, to one of the big companies finally said, let's bring him in, because he is incredibly talented. I think he ends up with the Bloodline. Is there a long shot chance that he ends up like on Roman side of this? I suppose, but I don't think that's the way. I think they're introducing Tama Tonga now. I think Fatu will be next. And eventually, I think we're going to get those guys and Solo going against Roman and the Usos. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And even though Solo seems like the leader right now, I still wouldn't be surprised if it's the final boss, The Rock, who is the real tribal chief. But we'll see. For those unfamiliar with Jacob Fatu, I think most people are, but for those who just kind of watch your WWE and AEW and don't see a lot of other stuff, get ready. This guy's definitely special. Was that it, DJ?
That was it. I mean, nothing too crazy, you know, coming out of this. So I just want to know. I just wish Jim Cornette would manage him. That would be pretty crazy, though, if they did. But, you know, of course he's going to go to the Bloodline. But I just thought, because, you know, sometimes they are a little weird and they might just put him in NXT. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? That's what I was asking.
But they also had Tama Tonga go right to the main roster, too. They didn't mess around with that. And so, is it possibly does NXT? Sure. If he does, it's not going to be for long.
Yeah.
I love Jim Cornette with the Midnight Express. I didn't love Jim Cornette with Yokozuna.
No, I wasn't big on that either. I'm with you on that, Jeremy. 262 has waited an eternity. Let's not waste any more time. 262, who is this and where are you calling from?
Mark from Wisconsin.
Hey, Mark, good to hear from you again. What's up, man?
Not much. How are you guys?
Doing great. Well. Doing well.
I got a new pinball table. I don't know if you heard.
I did. I would say something, but I don't know anything about pinball, so I don't even know where to start. So, congratulations.
Well, I have a Venom for sale for $9,000. You can learn all about it. You'll love it.
Sounds like a great way to start. Just dive right in.
Yeah, I mean, if you lower it by like $89.50 and cover the shipping costs, maybe we could talk.
You can drive to North Carolina. It's scenic.
Yeah, I think I'll pass for that one. Thank you for the offer.
You're welcome.
I want to kind of just put in my two cents on what you guys are talking about with the Brian injury angle. I'm not a huge fan of injury angles to begin with. It's like, I think when they happen, you know, when it leaves the ring, the injury angle should leave. But I think where they're probably going with this is that this is going to be the thing that eventually, like, fully dissolves Ospreay's membership with the Callis family.
Yeah.
I think Callis is going to be like, you know, you're weak, you're, you know, whatever, and this is going to be the thing that dissolves that. I think that's where they're going with this.
And then he gets
that's what
with
I read
the guys that
it.
He's already beaten?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don Callis is the best manager ever.
I mean, has he beaten Hobbs? I know he beat the other two. I don't know if he's beaten Hobbs. He may have, I just don't remember. Okay, never mind that. Okay. Maybe he'll beat all three of them at once.
That could be.
That'd be cool.
I'm looking it up now just to verify. But, when did he beat Hobbs? It was on the April 3rd edition of Dynamite. That's the one where after the match, I think Ospreay and Callis thought it was going to be friendly, and Hobbs wanted nothing to do with Ospreay.
Gotcha. Okay, that's starting to – okay, that makes sense. Moving on. The world title match in – this is like a multi-part question. It's all kind of in the same vein, so I'll just sort of ask it all at once. Is 4 months too short of a reign for Swerve? And if it's not, are they making a mistake by not putting the title on Ospreay at Wembley? And if you think they should put the title on Ospreay at Wembley, is Swerve the right opponent? So just, you know, answer that however you guys so choose.
Johnny, go ahead, man.
I don't see a way to get to Ospreay and Swerve by Wembley. If they do, it's rushed, and you're losing whatever you really got with Swerve with the championship. If you're going to turn him back heel after, I don't love it. I think there's enough combinations and potential opponents for Ospreay to be special there. But I think we're a year out from the exact same scenario, but with Ospreay and whoever his opponent is. And it can be Swerve. I wouldn't mind Swerve keeping the belt for, a year and 4 months. So I don't have a problem with that. But I think the conditions going into it need to be optimal, especially in a time like this for AEW when there's not as many eyeballs as they'd like. But there are a ton of peripheral eyeballs waiting for them to do something great, and the negativity that you hear and see right now, I think quickly changes. You know, just with just a couple great storylines featuring your major people, but rushing into a babyface Ospreay versus a babyface Swerve just for the sake of Ospreay winning at Wembley, I think is the wrong decision.
I think they can do the match. I wouldn't – right now I wouldn't be thinking we need to change the title to Ospreay either. A lot could happen, you know, between now and then, especially with Tony Khan's booking. A lot of people have stalled out, and I don't think Ospreay will. And even if he were to slow down some, going to Wembley, playing in front of that crowd, I think is going to heat him up in a big way again. But with Swerve, you just don't know. It really so much hinges on the booking. He's done a terrific job thus far. I would say that it is a very intriguing match on paper. And so even though I think you can get away with doing Ospreay and Okada this year instead, and then circle back and have Will go for the world championship the next year at Wembley, assuming there's going to be future shows at Wembley, I think that's fine. But you know, we're talking about this match right now, and there would be a lot of interest in the outcome because I think people have convinced themselves that Tony Khan promised Will Ospreay a world title win at Wembley Stadium. And I've never seen that officially reported. It's been speculation. I tend to believe that Will Ospreay signing with AEW had a lot more to do with the dollar amount and or the pounds in his case, and also the travel situation. I don't know that it took promising him a world championship to get him to sign. So I don't think they have to. But if they do go with that match, I think that because so many people will see it's Ospreay, it's Wembley, and if Swerve is firing on all cylinders, ideally, it can feel like a major showdown match, like who is going to win? Which direction do they go in? And I think that would be very appealing, but I just don't know if they'll go there. I don't want to see Swerve have that brief of a title reign. It worked for Samoa Joe because, again, I wouldn't have been surprised if Joe had dropped the title a week or two after. You know, and instead, they gave him a respectable title reign for a guy that ultimately was a bit of a transitional champion. I would hope that Swerve is more than a transitional champion. So I hope that whatever they do, they're going into this with the good faith idea of Swerve having a lengthy title reign. I would hope they don't have that end date in mind. Kind of like I said for Cody Rhodes, there's no reason right now to go, oh, it ends here. I think it doesn't mean it's going to be a year-long reign. It may not go well, but give it every opportunity to go well and see where it gets you. That's my take on it. Anything else, man?
I guess just one quick follow-up on that. If you do the match, can you have Swerve win and not have him, turn heel in the process? Like, can he still come out of beating Ospreay as a babyface?
I personally think he can. He could be a heel to that crowd, Johnny. But, I think Swerve is a good enough talker. I think he can kind of lean into his heelish side, in that match. But he doesn't necessarily have to be a heel. He can just kind of react to that crowd more so than doing a full-on turn. What do you think?
Yeah, and all it takes is a hug from Ospreay afterwards if he wins, and we're good. Like, Ospreay raises Swerve's hands afterwards with the Swerve win. Everyone's happy.
Yeah, I think so. And, it's okay if Will Ospreay doesn't win every match he's in. I get it's Wembley. It is a unique situation, and that's why I just don't know if they'll go with that match. But I see definitely pros and cons to going with it, and for that matter, going with him and Okada if they want to go in that direction. But anything else?
Yeah. So Jack Perry, I think probably one of the other big stories from last.
The scapegoat.
And I was thinking, the what?
The scapegoat.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Number one selling T-shirt at Pro Wrestling Tees. My good friends at ProWrestlingTees.com. Check them out.
Okay. So I was thinking of potential first opponents for him, and I think Eddie Kingston would make some sense because he can kind of be the standard bearer, but not sort of come off like a sycophant. But one of the other people, and I don't think they're doing this because they seem to have already set up his next match. I thought it'd be fascinating, him versus Adam Copeland would just be a fascinating contrast, gratitude versus grievance. So just get your phone.
What do you think, Johnny?
What? Copeland versus Jack Perry? I don't have a problem. I really think that Black is winning the TNT championship. But if Copeland has not become a demon or whatever the myth does to you, still not sure. And he just remains. I would love a Copeland versus Jack Perry feud. And with no, with or without a title, I don't think it's the one's dependent upon the other, and I'm for it.
Yeah, it's I'm curious to see how this goes, because to their crowd, and that's who, you know, is going to their shows primarily, they don't have much of a casual audience, it seems. It seems like those AEW crowds going to TV especially are the very vocal AEW fans. And right now, Jack Perry is a babyface to them. You know, they're on the side of Jack Perry in this whole thing, and he is clearly intended to be a heel because he's aligned with the Young Bucks. And even Okada, despite my early concerns in the match, like, wow, he seems to be leaning into this babyface reaction. Boy, did he get it right. He just flipped off the crowd when they thought they were getting the Rainmaker, and they were all over him, and then he really worked heel, and that was fun. So what does Perry do? Can he turn the fans against him? Do they lean into this and let him go with it? I just don't know. He may not need a title right now, but if they want to do him and Copeland, I'd be fine with it, Mark. What else, man?
That's all for me. I would just say this. Jason, you're not a huge college football fan, right?
No, I'm not.
I would just say if the Vikings do end up drafting J.J. McCarthy, be very skeptical because, he won a national championship, but I won't say they won it in spite of him, but they very much protected him. Like, it's I would not use a top 15 pick on J.J. McCarthy. Let's just put it that way. There's a lot of Mac Jones vibes. More athletic than Mac Jones, much more athletic, but definitely get some of those same game manager vibes from him.
All right, interesting. Jake Barnett, before we started recording one of the shows this week, we were talking about the draft, and he said similar things, that he just doesn't think he has the arm strength. I will personally defer to Kevin O'Connell, our head coach, former quarterback, been in the room with Brady, did really good things with Kirk Cousins, and I'm hoping that his quarterback expertise is going to lead to them actually drafting the right guy. Obviously, other teams will have a say in that too, that end up picking ahead of them. I've watched highlights and quickly realized you don't learn much from watching these highlights, because most of them are, hey, the receiver's 10 yards open and the quarterback hit him in stride. Like, well, the in stride part is nice, but can I see somewhere he's got to throw one into a tight window? And you really don't get that. So, I don't have a strong opinion. A lot of people seem to think it's Drake May that they covet. I don't know. There's also Jaden Daniels. And if they sit tight, Michael Penix Jr. It's going to be a very interesting Thursday night with the Vikings holding two picks and a lot of teams in need of a quarterback. But it sounds like the Vikings are willing to go all in to get their guy. But, again, if that guy gets taken, say, by number two, Washington, if Washington won't trade, then what do they do? I don't know, man. It's going to be a very interesting draft. So for both the NFL and, of course, for WWE. Hey, we do have open phone lines. 732, I see you sitting there. If you are just in listen-only mode, no problem at all. But if you did want to join into the conversation, remember to hit 1 on your phone to let us know that you want to chat. The number to call, if you would like to join us, is 773-897-6321. We do have some email questions that we will get to now. Thanks to everybody who sent those in. If you're listening and you'd like to send them in, .netjason@gmail.com. Just be sure to spell out the dot. I always say that because my girlfriend of all people tried to send me emails at periodnetjason@gmail.com once and couldn't figure out why they weren't going through. I love her. So we'll start with Jerry from Illinois. He asks, why are Danhausen and Billy Starks being featured more on GCW than in AEW? He said that Starks wrestled the same night as Dynasty for GCW in New Mexico, I think it must be. And Danhausen has been working a ton of their shows as well. These two are very over, so it sucks AEW doesn't use them more. I don't know. I mean, Starks is technically in Ring of Honor, doesn't make very many AEW appearances. And I don't understand, Johnny, why she and Athena are doing their thing in Ring of Honor. I don't understand why Ring of Honor is a thing. It's a fair question for Tony Khan. I just don't have a good answer to it. Same with Danhausen. And you saw a couple of different signs in different locations for him in the crowd last night. I don't know why they can't find a little something for him to do, because there is a crowd or an audience that likes him.
Well, I needed 12 more matches on the pay-per-view, Jason. So we can only have 11. Can Danhausen be one of them?
I didn't say I needed to see Danhausen wrestle, but if Danhausen wanted to pop up and do some little cutesy thing, and it didn't have to be last night, but just in general, you know, I don't know why, because he is kind of a popular
figure. I would use
him
more.
You mentioned, you mentioned the T-shirt company earlier. Wasn't he a big merch seller for them at one point?
He still is. Still is.
There you go.
So we were in Chicago 2 weeks ago. I had a VIP only party. It was limited to 30 people in Chicago. We had a rooftop party room. It was insanity. And I went that afternoon to Pro Wrestling Tees, printed a King George and Johnny Fairplay Chicago only T-shirt, and there is so much Danhausen around in their warehouse. I mean, it is Danhausen Central. He kills it. So he is a top T-shirt seller week after week, month after month. So, and you even have CM Punk promoting Danhausen still on his social media almost weekly.
Really? Wow. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I guess I have to pay more attention to Punk's social media. Jerry also asks, why did it take someone to tell Tony Khan, take a drink? Oh, I'm sorry. Tony Khan. That's how I say it when Tony gets overexposed.
Tony Ups.
That if you release TV and pay-per-view dates in advance, people can save to go. He says, I would think this would be a no-brainer. I didn't go to Collision in Peoria because I knew about it after my wife and I put our money toward bills. I only saw an ad for it around WrestleMania weekend. So what he's talking about is Tony Khan praised the new COO, Kosher Irby, I believe is his name, for coming up with the idea of releasing the entire pay-per-view schedule. And, for the remainder of the year so that people could plan vacations and things like that, plan to travel for it. I don't know why it took Kosher coming in to figure that out. I guess we all have our silly blind spots. I know I've had moments where something that would seem obvious to somebody else, they tell me and a light bulb goes off. I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes total sense. I don't know why I didn't think of it. But somebody in that company should have figured it out before Kosher, that's for sure. Before we get to the remainder of the emails, I'm going to make it brief. PWmembership.net, that's the place you want to go if you want to become an ad-free member of ProWrestling.net. Everything goes ad-free. The website itself is ad-free. The members have their own special ad-free website. And also, all of our audio content is ad-free. And there is a lot of audio content, all of the major television shows and PLEs reviewed in audio form. And also my Q&A audio show when I'm not doing this Boom Live show on Monday. I am taking questions from the members. Pro Wrestling to start. Non-wrestling insanity on the back end, always a good time. And then our flagship is the .NET Weekly Audio Show. Jake Barnett and I get together on Fridays now and run through all the news of the week. And Jake is fantastic, one of the best analysts you can find out there. And I really enjoy doing that show and really all the audio. I enjoy doing it, so I'm hoping that you will enjoy listening to it. Again, it's pwmembership.net. And if you ever have any questions about membership or anything else, you can use that email address I gave, .netjason@gmail.com, or follow me on social media at ProWrestlingNet. Just leave the dot out of that one, at ProWrestlingNet. We go to JB from Detroit. I got excited. I thought it was going to be JB from the WV, and then I could yell the WV part, but it's JB from Detroit. JB, I'm going to tell you up front, he sent a lot of observations in that he wanted us to go through, and there's only so much time, brother. So I plucked out a few questions that we haven't gotten to, I don't think yet, from your list. Number one, Okada is being treated very much as a babyface. Do you see this being a problem with getting the new elite booed and keeping them as heels? Well, I mean, we just kind of touched on that with Jack Perry, and I think he's the tricky one. I thought Okada did a masterful job last night of turning that crowd against him. But, Johnny, I think it's going to be a bit of an uphill battle because the average AEW fan worships Okada. And it doesn't mean they won't play along. So what do you think? Is the Elite going to have a hard time getting boos?
No, I think Matthew and Nicholas are good at their job, and they're doing the heavy lifting as far as the promos for the Elite currently. So that's going to help. And just picking the correct opponents currently. You know, I want Okada versus Ospreay at Wembley because, you know, I think there's a line drawn in the sand of good guy and bad guy. And you know, it can either be your semi-main or your main, and I think that people will go along accordingly. So I think is you know, the correct opponents and you know, and just, you know, just relying on Matthew Nicholas.
And then he also asks, are they going to make Mercedes Moné more like a heel going into her match against Willow at Double or Nothing? Or will they basically go with the face versus face dynamic? He says he doesn't see Willow being effectively framed as a heel, nor do I, nor does he think that it would be a smart move, neither do I. And where does Chris Statlander factor into all of this? We touched on it. Statlander, I think, will be revealed as the mystery attacker. But what do you think? By Double or Nothing, which is the end of May, when this match takes place, what is the dynamic there between Willow and Mercedes? Is there a definitive heel? Do they kind of play it straight, and the heel kind of rears its head during the match? What do you think?
Yeah, I think they both go in baby faces, and Statlander is going to be with Mercedes. That'll be the reveal, okay, you know, by the, you know, the latter stages of the match.
And then he asks, where does Jack Perry fit in with the Bucks and Okada, and also what is his ceiling in this new role? The Bucks are the tag team champions. Okada's the continental champion. So what is Jack Perry's role? Is he going to get his own title? Is he just going to be content interfering in their matches? What do you see, Johnny, and what is the ceiling?
I think TNT championship is good. And not in the immediate future, but I could see Jack Perry with all stars lining up correctly. He could be a world champion in the future.
I don't see it yet. Keep in mind, there was a time where I didn't see Cody Rhodes as a future world champion. So just because I'm not seeing it now doesn't mean it won't happen. TNT champion, I want to say no because I don't think the Elite needs that many title belts, but then I'm reminded of just how many damn title belts there are in AEW. And
too
so
many.
If he does get one, yeah, there are, you know, and that really worked against that Roddy Strong match last night too, I thought. Like, I thought Orange Cassidy did a brilliant job of making people care about the international title. And Roderick Strong, as good as he is, when he won it, it just kind of went back to feeling like a distant fourth on their pecking. I don't even know. Yeah, probably fourth, because the continental title now feels more important. I don't see Perry going after that title, obviously, with Okada holding it. So I'm going to go with he doesn't get a title, but he is kind of the pest heel of the group. Interfering and different things, and that doesn't mean he won't go after a title, but I just don't know they need to deck them all out with championships. That's just my best guess.
The New Japan Strong title does Jack Perry no good.
No, I don't think the New Japan Strong title really does anyone any good.
Anyone.
In AEW.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
There we go.
New Japan Strong was a thing for a while, and I know they still do their shows over here, but those feel like New Japan now rather than what was New Japan Strong. So I don't know why they felt the need to keep those title belts around. They kind of have the same issue Tony does where they just have too many damn title belts. Jermaine from Chicago, he says, AEW wrestling were the best wrestlers wrestle. He forgot the H. And he says, Tony Khan has never lied. Bullshit. Great pay-per-view last night. And I can back that up, Jermaine. You know how I can tell you that Tony Khan has lied? Number one, he's human. We all have. But also, he's the guy that told us that he would not release anyone under contract and took shots at WWE over it and then recently released people while they were under contract. So there you go. He's a promoter.
He lied to me personally, Jason.
We all do it.
Lied to me personally. Cody Rhodes' last appearance in AEW at the Greensboro Coliseum, I was there, and the show ended. Cody Rhodes was talking to the crowd. Tony Khan came out, was talking to the crowd. Hook came out and confronted Cody Rhodes. And he was like, hey, me and you. And Tony Khan promised us that it's not happening tonight, but he promised that we would get Hook versus Cody Rhodes at the Greensboro Coliseum. I don't see an end game for this. I feel we were lied to.
Maybe he can see the future, and he knows that WWE will do that match at the Greensboro Coliseum someday.
Well, I felt that those were I felt he talked outside of his means.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm joking, of course, but everybody lies, Jermaine. But I know Jermaine was just saying when it comes to the wrestling, he says great pay-per-view last night. Indeed, it really was.
Yeah,
he says I want to ask you about a babyface dynamic in WWE. That if you think about it, it's hard to understand. Roman Reigns, who has done nothing but cheat and gang jump everyone on the roster for 3 years, loses his title to Cody Rhodes while cheating. And after that match, says if you lose, you have to accept the outcome. To me, it's a total character flip out of nowhere. The fans forget all of this happening for 3 years because another heel takes over his faction and they chant, "We want Roman." WWE fans are either the most forgiving people ever or have short-term memory loss. Can you guys help make it make sense? Even when the guy's not on TV, Jermaine is still obsessed with it. You seek help, Jermaine. Jesus. Johnny, your thoughts?
Yeah, both. They have short-term memory loss, and they're very forgiving. It's called pro wrestling fans, or as Daniel Bryan calls them, pickle.
I kind of look at – so just from a storytelling standpoint, Roman Reigns lost the thing most important to him. He lost his championship after that long reign. And if something like that were to happen in real life, it might make you sit down and reevaluate things. And so this is the beginning, I think, of a babyface turn for Roman. And I think it was actually very well done. It is out of character. And that's by design. It's meant to like, whoa, this is coming from Roman Reigns. So I think you're just looking for Roman to be the same person he was, where they're kind of telling you he's changing, Jermaine. That's how I see it, Johnny. What do you think of that?
Sure, I'm with it. I think Roman is going to be an incredible babyface, and I think Cody Rhodes is going to be a ridiculously incredible heel with Brandi Rhodes.
Yeah, yeah, when that time comes, look out when Cody turns. I mean, he's got a great babyface run ahead, no doubt. But
yeah,
I think we've all, since those AEW days, yeah, but since those AEW days, we've all like, man, this guy's going to be a great heel. The other part of this, I forgot where I was going. Anyway.
Cody, Cody plays a great Dusty Rhodes, and he has the formative years to be that person. He's going to make a great Ric Flair too. And he also has the formative years to do that as well.
Yes. Yep. I know what I was going to say now. And then I'm losing it again. Jesus. You can tell it's Monday, folks. It'll come to me. While I'm thinking
420.
I know what it was. No. Yeah. Maybe that's it. It's still lingering. The Roman Reigns part of this, you said he's going to make an amazing baby face. This is the same guy who came back from a leukemia battle, and I thought, there's no way they can turn this guy heel anytime soon. The fans are going to love him. And the fans turned on him again. And the only reason that I have any hesitation, because I do think times have changed, you have better creative now, but watching his induction speech for Paul Heyman, I was underwhelmed. I'm like, oh. I mean, I would think he's still going to have Paul Heyman as part of his act, and it's going to feel a little awkward with Paul playing a babyface role. But after just seeing Roman deliver that speech, I think he plays the tribal chief character extremely well. But I still have some questions about Roman's, like, true off-the-cuff promo skills. Because did you see that speech, Johnny? Do you think I'm being too hard on it?
I didn't see it. There was just too much wrestling that week, and then with my insane travel schedule. So that's on the docket for as soon as this tour ends. I'm anxiously looking forward to it, but I want to enjoy it with the right state of mind and with the time allowed, to watch it in its entirety correctly.
Yeah, fair enough. And there's too much wrestling every weekend these days, but certainly that one. Yeah, and I don't want you to go in expecting like, oh my God, what did he do? It's not like it's terrible. It just was underwhelming. Like, oh, that's it from Roman, huh? Yeah, it was nothing special. But then the final question, normally we don't do non-wrestling on the show, Jermaine, but he does have a question specifically for you. Jermaine says he went on The Price is Right, but he did not get picked by the producers. So what
Mark.
Advice would you give him to stand out to the interviewers or the producers to get on a reality show or a game show?
Oh, well, step one, when I'm in your area, like Chicago, Illinois, I would go to the Beyond VIP viewing party and ask the 12 reality stars, some of the greatest of all time, I would pick their brain individually, because there was the opportunity for people to have one-on-one time with the greatest minds in the history of the game to get the answers to such questions. I mean, this is Jason Powell. This is the pro wrestling boom. This is about pro wrestling. This is about boom. There you go. SurvivorTix.com. SurvivorTix.com. Get those one-on-one experiences. Get those answers. Become a patron at RealityPatron.com. Ask those questions during the reality Q&A portion of my week.
I love it. Yeah, Jermaine, I think this is your payback for not going when Johnny was there.
It was insane.
So,
oh, my God. Hot tub party. It ended in a hot tub party, Jason. Back-to-back nights.
By the way, apparently we're not alive, Johnny. I just had Jerry from Illinois say that the live feed cut off when I was answering his second question. But that's okay, because I'm still recording.
Fair.
And everybody will get this soon enough. I mean, Jermaine, I'm not Johnny. I would think, and Johnny, correct me if I'm wrong, when you're being interviewed by those people, to get on the game show, be as upbeat as possible, and you know, somebody that they would look at and go, oh, this person would be a fun contestant. I don't even have any better advice than that, but if you just kind of stand there and play it cool, and you're probably not going to get picked.
Have you seen the Price is Right documentary on Netflix?
Oh, I don't know. There was one about the guy who was fixing everything.
The guy that memorized all the answers.
Yes, I did see that.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, he explained, so he went multiple times, and he would change his, because they do a, when you're standing in line, production is doing a pre-interview there. They're choosing who's going to be picked from the pre-interview line. And so if you watch the documentary, I don't know, as I said, look up, do a Google search, Price is Right documentary on Netflix. He explains what they're looking for, the answers they're looking for, and the outfits that they're looking for the Price is Right in particular.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if they'll let you, but don't wear like a jersey or something. They're not going to want to put certain things on the air. I know that much.
Yeah.
And just looking up the documentary here. I did see that, I think it's Wheel of Fortune, the game show, you know, the traveling version is coming, and it's the host of Temptation Island who is doing this. It's still not enough to get me to go. Perfect Bid, the contestant who knew too much, I believe, is the name of that documentary. And it is good. Definitely, I remember
it's
seeing
very
that.
Good.
I think you can still find it on Netflix. Well, Johnny, anything else going on before we wrap this bad boy up? Because I don't think we can take calls now if the switchboard is still having issues. And we've exhausted all the emails.
Yeah, no, I'm
so you're
I'm
all good?
Playing some pinball. Yeah, I'm playing some pinball, getting ready to finish up the tour. Go to SurvivorTix.com, join me and King George. Check out Reality After Show. Do a search. The YouTube will remain the same. It's YouTube.com/AfterShow. But for the search, it's just Reality After Show. You're going to see some major, major changes. It's incredible. As I said, I have a ton to tell you off the air, Jason, but search Reality After Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you pod, and I'm so excited that the future of the Reality After Show empire is through the roof, and we're beyond stoked over here.
Awesome. Johnny, I will give you a call tomorrow or Wednesday. Go play your pinball today, and we definitely will catch up. It's been too long. And good news, Sean from Murfreesboro let me know that he still hears us. So it's a good thing we didn't start just talking shit about Jerry from Illinois and find out, like, oh, people can still hear us. But I don't know what's going on with why Jerry couldn't hear us, but Sean says he can. So we're still on the air, but not for long, because we are going to end it here. A big thanks, as always, to Johnny for joining me. Awesome co-hosting job, as usual. I'm excited for him and his new pinball machine. the next live edition, I'll check with Johnny. I can't remember. He said he had something coming up, I thought, in May. But our next live show is Monday, May 6th, coming out of WWE Backlash. We are live the Mondays after WWE and AEW weekend pay-per-view events. Oops, I'm knocking things over. And the only exception is holiday weekends. When there's like Labor Day, Memorial Day, then we'll do the show on a Tuesday. But again, the next one is Monday, May 6th, post-WWE Backlash, so you don't have to wait too long. And hopefully we will hear from you. Hopefully the switchboard will be working. And I look forward to that one. In the meantime, you can hear more .NET Audio by becoming a member, pwmembership.net, very simple. And we would love to have you on board to sample what we do. And we have a ton of audio content waiting for just waiting for you on our ad-free site. Again, it's pwmembership.net. And if you have any questions, hit me up at PW. Gosh, you can tell it is Monday, man. My Lord. And it is, I think it is the 420 thing that Fairplay mentioned. Follow me on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet. There we go. I got it out of my system. So anyway, gang, yeah, TNA happened. I haven't really talked about that other than the top of the show. We didn't get any calls on it. I'm not surprised, but it was a good show overall. Not a bad show at all. I still think they're a little too old, but I talked about that already. So if you haven't checked out the last Boom episode, it went up very early Sunday morning, I believe, or maybe it was late. I think it was late Saturday night. So if you want to hear detailed thoughts on TNA Rebellion, check out that one. And I will talk to you guys again on the members' side tonight after Raw and everybody else Monday, May 6th, WWE Backlash France. Take care.